Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is Daniel Davey. This was a very, very enjoyable conversation, and I'm absolutely delighted that we got to record it because it is one that I'm going to go back and listen to because there was a few things that Daniel said here that I'm definitely going to reflect on when it comes to nutrition, when it comes to behavior around food, and just your engagement to your diet in general. Daniel, as I mentioned in the introduction, best-selling author of Eat Up and Raise Your Game, performance nutritionist, works with the Dublin GAA footballers, the multiple time All-Ireland winners, and Leinster rugby. Even though we didn't focus too heavily on the sports side today, we kind of interweave how to set up your, finding your why or set up your motivation and set up your goals for by having your ultimate goal that you're working towards when it comes to your nutrition. Some of the things we talked about, the importance of taking full ownership of your nutrition to hit any goal, the nutritional philosophy of knowledge, skill, and motivation, and using that pyramid to set yourself up when it comes to what kind of diet or nutritional plan is going to work best for you, the importance of the behavior element and your personal engagement to your food plan, definitely a section that is going to be very valuable for a lot of you listening, myself included. How to find your motivation by figuring out your ultimate goal, the importance of health-seeking behavior when it comes to actually changing your body composition, and we also delve into the mental health, owning who you are, your background, and how he used social media to help with his own personal self-discovery. So we take a nice little mindset route about three quarters of the way in before we double back to finish up on nutrition. So this is an awesome conversation. I loved this. I love Daniel's content. I've been following his Instagram for ages. He puts out incredible recipes. His book, I highly recommend checking out, Eat Up and Raise Your Game, for anyone that's looking for simple and easy to prepare meals. And without further ado, here is today's episode, Daniel Davey, on owning your nutrition and exploring your behavior around food. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Daniel Davey. Daniel is a performance nutritionist and author of the number one bestseller, Eat Up and Raise Your Game. He received his BSc in science from the University College Dublin and holds an MSc in nutrition, physical activity and public health from the University of Bristol. His best-selling book and Instagram page is all based around simple recipes and meal plans. I'm looking forward to talking all things nutrition, food and performance in today's episode. Daniel, welcome to this long overdue podcast. We have been looking to do this forever, so I'm absolutely delighted that we finally got to set it up.
Yeah, thanks a million for having me on. I've definitely been looking forward to it, and as they say, it's better late than never.
Exactly. We're going to talk on a few topics that we hadn't planned on covering before chatting, and we will dive into a few things on mental health and some of the misconceptions that people have around social media, and kind of delving into some of the mindset side when it comes to the male standpoint online, which is awesome that we were chatting just before we went on air, because that wasn't what I had previously planned to talk about. But before we get into any of that or anything nutrition and diet, can you tell everybody listening a little bit about yourself, your backstory, and what got you into the world of nutrition?
Sure. So from a very, very young age, I was fascinated about health, performance, nutrition. There was a very strong influence from home. My dad worked in the local dairy, so that actually it stimulated a lot of conversation around food and the production of food. I played sport myself all my life, particularly in GAA, but I always had an interest in strength training too, which is the reason I went on and did my qualifications in strength conditioning. So I guess the basis of it was always in food and understanding food and getting better at the preparation of food. But that was then, how can we live long, healthy lives, and how can we improve our health and performance? So like you've outlined, I studied nutrition and then was very fortunate to have quite a diverse experience within working in sport, but also working in industry. So I started out working in a sports supplement company while working with the Dublin Hurlers. That was kind of my first real experience of working in sport. And then I went on very fortunately to work with Dublin and Leinster. And now I have my own clinic as well.
Yeah, we'll come back because there's a few things that I want to ask as just a sports fan about the kind of approach when it comes to, say, Dublin GAA versus Leinster. So I will definitely double back on that. But to keep it in the nutrition side just for the minute, what I love about your content, your book does this, your Instagram page, your recipes are very easy. They're very simple to do, which again, you know, genius in simplicity. I'm not an amazing cook by any stretch, so the easier, the better. When it comes to putting out your nutritional message online, what are your kind of primary philosophies when it comes to nutrition? In the sense that, do you have, like I have, my grounding in nutrition is always try and eat it primarily real food as much as possible. You know, track your calories if you want to lose weight. You know, and it kind of veers based on the goal. What's your kind of overall nutritional philosophy when it comes to people and approaching their dietary requirements based on whatever their goal is?
Okay, so I'm looking at three real key pillars. The first thing is knowledge and information. So does the person have the information to achieve what they need to, or want to achieve, whatever that goal is, like you just mentioned there. The next thing is skill. So has the person got the required skill to achieve or to implement that knowledge? And then the third piece is motivation and inspiration and, you know, leading by example. So the simplicity that you talk about is, can you deliver a piece of information? And my primary vehicle for education is food. So demonstrating a recipe and then giving the context. So how can this meal be used within your lifestyle? Is it a breakfast, snack, lunch, dinner? How quickly can it be made? Is it high in carbohydrate, low in carbohydrate? Is it nutrient dense? Is it a mixed meal? And then what's the time or what's the skill element in that? So if you kind of follow that type of theme and you repeat it and you understand what you're trying to deliver, then the hope is that you engage people with that kind of content.
I'm very curious on this question because just before we went on air, we were talking about kind of our demographics and our split, and we have very, very similar demographics in terms of, you know, male to female, age ranges, etc. I'm curious, and this is purely as a personal standpoint, what's one of the biggest misconceptions that comes in from, say, social media or online when it comes to diet and nutrition? Or is there any question that you get asked frequently that is a heavy misconception, or for whatever reason people have a preconceived idea of some form of nutrition or food or diet in general? Do you see anything that comes up frequently? I'm just, as I said, curious because of our similar backgrounds, if the questions are the same or if you get something completely different.
There's an enormous amount of confusion around nutrition, and that's why I do keep to such a very simple education philosophy, and why if I share meals that I cook and eat myself, that the aim is that you're trying to reduce that confusion by demonstrating that if there's a food first approach and you're actually in, you're owning your own nutrition and preparing your own meals, that's going to make, from a very simple standpoint, that's going to make your life an awful lot easier. I suppose the biggest trend or the most common things that are coming up are the beliefs around individual foods and how foods can be demonized in themselves. And that's still, we're still seeing, is dairy, is it, you know, people want to know, is it low fat dairy products? Is it high fat dairy products? You know, is the whole late at night thing, is it as much of an issue as people believe? It's about, you know, I will put up recipes all the time and I'll get very specific questions about how much olive oil I've used, or you know, the portion size seems so big, people can't get their head around that I would eat that much food, or that I would have cheese on top of a meal. So it's really not being able to take a massive step back, not just a step back, but a big step back, and seeing things in context. And I think people are getting lost within those minor details rather than understanding, hold on a second, I'm not going to eat the whole thing now in the space of 10 minutes. I'm not going to polish a meal with four portions in it. I may have had two meals myself earlier that day. I might have trained. Everything is within the context of that person. And I don't get lost in the minutiae of nutrition. So I'm seeing that kind of consistent trend over and over and over, where people are just looking at a meal in that singular and not in the context of five other meals or how much activity I've done in a given day.
That's such a great, it reminds me when I was training for Marathon de Sable in 2018, so the six back-to-back marathons in the Sahara, I was eating like 200 gram chocolate bars every day, like the green and blacks, chocolate bar, butterscotch or white chocolate. And I was posting them on my story, and I remember getting so many messages, people going, oh my God, how do you eat? That's 1200 calories. How are you eating that? I'm like, well, I ran 12 miles this morning. I ran 15 miles this morning. I'm like, I trained for 4 hours today. And one of the reasons I stopped putting up a lot of my meal posts personally was the context was lost. I'm like, I got a little bit confused in terms of the social media posting, because people were thinking, one, that this was all I was eating, or two, they didn't have the context of the training. So unless I was putting up my entire days of training, my entire eating around that day without the extra context. And what I try and promote or tell people on social media is context is key. And this is what I love about your message, Daniel. We're very similar in that sense, that context matters. You know, it's not that this food is good or bad. It's not that, you know, you should or shouldn't add cheese to this meal. It's what's the context? There's so many moving parts. And which brings me on to kind of, when you mentioned, say, cheese there, you mentioned dairy, is there any misbeliefs that you generally see around foods? Like, again, the reason and it may not be milk or cheese, is just that dairy is one that can get really demonized for people. It may be something completely different, but what's a common misbelief that you see when it comes to people's diet or nutrition in general?
I think it's along the same type of theme, and that is that people change one thing and that they see a result and they think that that's the reason why they've seen the results that they have. I keep harping on about the behavior element as much as the actual nutrition components. So one of the best examples of this, and geez, if he ever hears this, he may kill me, but I did a case study on one of the Dublin athletes. He switched from an omnivore diet in 2018 to 2019, and I studied every aspect of his diet, and I looked at all of the performance variables. So even things like metabolic output, changes in body composition, meters covered per minute, and all of these elements, power, speed, strength. And from 2018, when he was an omnivore, to 2019, where he was a vegan, there was a marginal improvement in certain performance measures, and things like his muscle mass actually increased and was maintained, and his general recovery and his perception of his well-being was better. But, and this is the major but, he was highly engaged. So what you will see is in his nutrition and his training, and what you will see is you'll see this trend where people change aspects of their diet. Now, I'm talking about one particular example, one highly motivated individual, but his engagement in nutrition in general was much better. You know, he had done 3 months of research, and maybe more, maybe 5 months of his own research, 3 months of pretty intense work with me, and his understanding of nutrition had dramatically improved. So if we give an example of where somebody sets about improving their body composition, and then they look at things within their diet that they know they need to improve, they remove that processed food, or they like, I don't want to get into the the positives and negatives of fasting, but people decide that intermittent fasting is the direction that they want to go, and they narrow their eating window, which means that they're not eating chocolate biscuits with their tea on front of the television at 9 o'clock, you know? So they think it's the intermittent fasting, but what they've done is they've changed other behaviors too. And I think that's what I'm trying to help people see all the time, is that bigger picture.
That's such a great line, that the behavior element and why that plays such an important role. When you think of behavior element, what, in your opinion, and again, just purely your professional opinion, what do you think is the biggest barrier to people's behavior, in the sense that do they have a mindset issue when it comes to getting stuck in, you know, one mode of thinking about food, or, you know, separating food into good or bad categories, or thinking that there's a magic pill or a magic diet out there? Or is there any sort of behavior element that you commonly see that's not very supportive of, for people to adopt in terms of the philosophy they have when it comes to their nutrition?
I think that that particular issue will vary from person to person. I think one of the things that is a massive problem in current society is people working incredibly hard, but comparing what they're doing to what somebody else is doing, and believing that if they follow a practice that somebody else is doing, that will work for them. So that's definitely one major issue. I was actually working with a client over the last 10 weeks. She's training harder than any athlete that I work with. Like, she was doing exhaustive training 6 days a week and trying to stick to 1800 calories, and thinking that was what was going to get her the results that she was looking for. And I really drilled into her, going back to the why, I really drilled into what was the ultimate goal. And the ultimate goal was improved performance and actually hitting the kind of power outputs and strength and performance outputs that she wanted. And I said, well, how can you achieve what you want to achieve? I did an estimate of her, you know, her basic requirement for calories, and it was 2,400. So I just, you know, we really broke it down. I said, so how can you achieve that goal if you are not consuming at sufficient calories? So once everything became the performance focus, it just became so much easier. So does eating this food and being specific about my protein carbohydrate needs to result in this improvement in performance, does that fit? And when that became the focus, it was so much easier for her to focus on that rather than what anybody else was doing. And what was really fascinating about it was she was glowing when I spoke to her. You know, the next time I spoke, it was about 6 weeks later, she looked better, she felt better, her energy levels had improved. She had put a PB on one of her lifts of 7 kilos, which is enormous. Like people who are training consistently will know what 7 kilos means. So her energy levels were better, she felt better, she was sleeping better. And here's the cherry on top, was that her body composition had improved. Her weight was actually down from increasing her calories. So we hear about this stuff all the time, but we have to focus on our own personal journey rather than getting distracted.
She may be a really good example, but you may have another kind of top of mind. But you mentioned there, you know, finding her why, or finding why she was doing it. How do you recommend to either athletes or everyday individuals to, how do they find their ultimate goal? I think when it comes to, say, motivation, like, knowing why you're doing something is absolutely key and crucial, but everyone has different approaches to what they recommend, you know, as a coach, in terms of figuring out why somebody should be doing what they're doing, or why they're even doing it themselves in the first place. What's your advice, or what's your approach when it comes to getting people to find their ultimate goal? Or is that something that, it, from the sounds of it, it sounds like you help them directly with, but what's your experience with that, or what's your thoughts on that?
I think that's a brilliant question, because I think if you asked me the question a year ago, I wouldn't have as much of an understanding. And I think there's anyone who's working in this space realizes that we actually don't know that much about the whole mindset and understanding how to get to that why as we think we do. But it is really about facilitating and listening. And I think that where I would start for anybody who's listening is to find somebody who you can have that conversation with. And you know, sometimes it's a professional. And it's somebody like ourselves that are working in that space who can facilitate people figuring out that where that why or what that why is. But it could also be a friend or it can be a colleague. But I think the conversation and the self-reflection element is so, so critical to all of my coaching. So I will integrate a process of reflection in everybody's week where they will reflect on their behaviors and what they're doing and really try and see by writing it down if that picture is matching their why and their goals and really stripping it back. Because if you really deep down, if you think, you know, what are the reasons for me to put in this effort? Because it's hard. It's not easy. All of this stuff, even to prepare your lunch, as part of your evening preparation for the next day, that takes thought and it takes energy. And you need to, when it's difficult, you know, when it's challenging, you need to have that why very close to the surface so that you can tap into it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think knowing why you're doing something and just asking why repeatedly, like I do that, ask why 3 times, like ask somebody why. I remember when I was working one-to-one with a girl and I asked her the why multiple times. She was like, I want to lose, 50 pounds. I'm like, why do you want to lose 50 pounds? Mm-hmm. And when we got down to the root of it, it was like, well, I feel super unconfident and there's people, you know, that I would love to talk to and be, that I'm attracted to, and I have no confidence to speak to them. I'm like, that's very different from I want to lose 50 pounds, you know. Exactly. But on the outside, it looks the same if you don't dig in deeper. And you kind of gave me a nice little segue there because we talked about self-reflection on goals, and I want to pivot the conversation slightly into kind of the realm of social media and mental health. And we were talking just before we went on air and I literally cut you off and was like, Daniel, save it, we're going to put it on the podcast. We were talking, one of the things I love about your content, and now that we're connected properly, is, you know, I love the stuff you put out. I think you put out your book again. Gary, who's my executive assistant, has literally, I think, done every recipe from your book. And the content you're putting out between the Q&As and the recipes on your Instagram page, there's so much value there. And I think it's very important I know there's people all over the world that listen to this podcast, but in the Irish space, the UK space, that people support one another and promote each other's message because there's different fits out there for different people. What's been your experience when it comes to social media? Because your Instagram has kind of exploded over the last, year, 18 months or so. And, particularly with the book and the book doing so well, what's been your experience with that kind of online growth over the last, year and a half or so?
I am not saying anything that's very, very different than I was a couple of years ago. Like I haven't changed as a person that much, maybe as much, I'd like to think I have. But the reality is that I've got conviction and confidence in my message. And I think one of the things that the book has done is that it gave me even more confidence that the simplicity of the message engages people. It helps them understand that if you own your nutrition and that you invest time in it, that you will see the results. And I don't mean that it's always body composition related, because I think that's where we often go, but that the process of preparing food can be an enjoyable one. And I talk about, really, if you spend the time in anything, that you will have this. I was talking about it earlier about the health seeking behaviors. If you're cooking and you put time into your food, you'll enjoy your food, and that will bring on, like, you feel better about it. You want to train, you want to get more sleep, and it's a wider process. So the whole thing about social media has been overwhelmingly positive. I've only had very, very, very minor negative experiences. And even those very minor or negative experiences, I've turned those into a positive too. But what I was talking to you about was there's an interesting space within, I don't know if it's, I suppose I speak about Irish society, but there's probably, it's different in different cultures, but I feel really strongly about the spreading of positive information within our health space and people who do it and who do it well. I want them to do well. I want them to have continued success because I believe that you're going to improve people's lives. And that's what we're in the business of. We're in the business of reducing confusion, making health and performance a simpler goal to achieve. And if you do that well, then I want you to do as well as possible, as well as possible. And as long as there's simplicity in people's messages, I think that we should help each other. And I think that's my overall experience of that has been positive. But I think that sometimes we get lost, and, you know, we get lost in the whole numbers thing on following and engagement and stuff like that. And my core belief, and it's not like I've switched this on or I just became like this overnight, is that if I believe I can stimulate a positive conversation, even in quirky ways, I'm going to do that because that's who I am. And I'm becoming more confident in who I am. And if you like it, then fantastic. And if you don't, well, then that's absolutely fine too.
We were talking just before we went on air to kind of keep with the theme of this particular conversation, because I'm fleshing this out for the first time as well, in the sense that we were talking about social media and our engagement. And we're very, very similar, as I mentioned, with our audience, but even with our engagement, that, you know, we put out your message a little bit more specific towards nutrition, but you have a lot of other stuff on there as well in terms of mindset and, you know, and life stuff that's a little bit even deeper on the level than nutrition. And my content is quite similar. I talk a lot of mindset stuff. And an interesting point that you brought up that I hadn't really previously considered was you mentioned that mostly females will interact with your content publicly. And as I thought about it, I'm like, actually, that's very similar to me. I'm like, anytime I put up a podcast or mention something around mental health or anxiety, you know, things I've dealt with and have talked about on the podcast countless times, I generally don't get that much public interaction from guys, but I will get DMs from them, you know, whereas females will comment publicly. They'll like it, they will share it, they will comment, but I still get the interaction with guys, but it's privately. Why do you think that happens when we touch on topics that go outside of nutrition or outside of basic fitness? Because I know something similar happens to you. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I suppose I think that it takes a lot of, you know, from my perspective, there's been a bit of trial and error. And I'm going to take a little bit of a step back, because the book was a big eye-opener for me, because I thought me sharing my story and, you know, even being from a really rural part of Ireland and being a sheep farmer and all of the things that actually represent who I am, if I shared a piece of content from that, I used to feel desperately insecure about it. I can even feel myself, you know, like bringing up that kind of emotion, because it was like, you know, like, who is into the kind of things that I really value, like the walks on my farm, or, you know, the engagement with the activities with my sheep, or helping my uncle with his cattle. Like, this is all this kind of stuff that, like, brought me, it's a massive part of who I am. And even nature has a profound impact on my well-being. And I suppose I was always very afraid to kind of tap into that and to share that part of it, because I felt like people would have associated me with predominantly the popular aspect of being associated with Dublin football and Leinster rugby and that sport and its performance and it's cool. But there's a massive part of me that's separate, and that I express myself in a very different way, and I'm only beginning to kind of reveal part of that. And people would very much, and particularly men, would take the piss out of that and It's maybe in their own lives there were things that they did that they wouldn't share, and that I would have been maybe in some part of me expressing that was reflective on things that they didn't share themselves. I have felt that women are more, I suppose, understanding and maybe a little bit more comfortable with engaging with that in a positive way.
How, because you mentioned a really good point, and you know, you've mentioned, say, owning your nutrition, which is a line I love, and we might double back on even to explore that a bit more. But you mentioned there about, you know, owning the aspects of who you are. So you grew up in Sligo, you're a farmer, these are the things you love, these are the things you value. Very, very similar. Like a lot of the personal growth I got myself when I was able to disconnect myself from the opinions of others. And, you know, I very much am trying to be as authentic as I can on social or on podcasts. I'm like, look, if you like me, great. If you don't, that's also fine. I'm like, you know, at least it's true for me. What was your journey, or what was your even first step towards either disconnecting from the opinions of others or coming to terms with the fact that people might take the piss out of you if you try and show up the way that you authentically are, for the lack of an Americanized term, you know, your truer self. But what was your step for that? Because a lot of people listening, both genders, guys and girls, from my experience, guys tend to find this a little bit harder, but both genders struggle with it. What was your kind of first step towards, you know, taking ownership? This is who I am. This is my story. This is what I value. Yeah, it might be different from you, and it might, you might want to take the piss out of me for it. What was your kind of first step towards that? Or was it a gradual process of asking better questions, or books that you read, or people you interacted with? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, I think I probably have, again, a little bit more understanding about it, even as a result of COVID, because I've been so removed from just even contact with my wider group and people who, you know, I'm interacting with predominantly male environments on a daily basis, and all of that was removed. And it gave me plenty of time to reflect on it. I think I'll start by saying that I'm very, very fortunate to have a very strong support network, a very close, very strong support network, who have known me for who I am for a very long time. And family is obviously the first thing, and my partner. But I also have really, like, I feel privileged to have very good friends. So when I did all the daft things that they've seen me do, or share aspects of, you know, my background farming, all that kind of stuff, they didn't take the piss out of me about it. You know, they just knew that that's who I was. So I think that's the first thing. I have people who believe in me. And when I have those doubts, I could share them. So then moving on, I suppose there's the books element. It's not just about being better, you know, it's about being different and being comfortable with being different. And that, you know, so that's kind of in the ether now in general. And then I suppose, over the past couple of months, if you want to kind of bring it up to more recent times, when I have done those little things where I've shared or give a greater glimpse of who I am, there's people within different environments that I would have been really surprised about coming back and saying, I like that shit. You know, I enjoyed that. And then there's others who just think you're being absolutely daft. But the people's opinions that I value and the people who I care about and I feel know me the best are giving me that little bit of extra reassurance as well. So it's not like I'm robotic, and it's not like I've stepped out in the world and now I know who I am and I can just be who I am. It is absolutely a gradual process.
Yeah, I think that's such great advice for people. That you, one of the things I talk about in the podcast is that, you know, focus on, get clear on whose opinion does matter. I think that's a very important process, because it's not a case of, you know, just disconnect from everyone's opinion. I'm like, that's also not a valuable way to approach things. I'm like, but if you get clear on your parents, your inner circle, your partner, you know, your boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, whoever it is, it's the closest people to you. I'm like, get, if their opinion matters, then you dictate what decisions you make based on how it affects them or how they'll respond. Everybody else outside of that, then it's like, okay, it's just going to be an opinion. Like, the truth is, you know, people aren't going to know the true Daniel Davey. They're not going to know the true Brian Keane unless they're seeing you every day and they're interacting with you, because social media, podcast is a little bit better because you can go deeper versus something like Instagram where there's stories and walls. It's very kind of, you know, segmented in terms of you don't have the full context of a person. Did you find that the growth on social media helped you come to terms with that faster, or was it something that you were on that process of that nearly self-discovery journey anyways, or did that just speed it up a little bit? And the reason I ask is because social media for me has been an amazing tool for kind of personal growth, because you get called out, you know, and it makes it, sometimes I have no problem being called out for something if I genuinely believe it. If I have an opinion on something and somebody calls me out and they have an opposite opinion, I'm like, all right, cool, you know. But what I don't like is when I get called out on something where I've been misinterpreted or misunderstood for some reason. But it makes you refine, you know, self-discovery. What's truly authentic for me? What do I really believe? What was your relationship with social media in that regard? Did that help it, hinder it, or was it neutral?
Yeah, these are things I've thought about, but I've definitely never discussed, certainly never discussed publicly. I think social media has actually been a very, very positive influence. And I say that probably because of something that, you know, we've talked about, and that I don't try to be polarizing. I try to be evidence-based with my information. And I think that the sharing component has probably brought my development forward, even my own personal growth forward, because of that sharing and becoming comfortable with certain aspects of what I've talked about already. But I want to kind of just, and it's popped into my head, and I think this is a really important element to this. And that is, I don't do things on social media for show. I really don't. Like, I put stuff on social media. You know, you talk about authenticity and what that actually means and what that represents. Like, for me, I share a piece of content with an audience that I would share if the person was in the room right now. So it would come into my mind, like, you know, and I did it even last night. I was like, you know, what are the sports that demand the most energy and the physical, you know, what are the physical attributes of different sports that differentiate them? And like, you know, they're things that I would ask at work, or the things I would ask my friend, the things that have come up in conversation. So it's stimulating that thought with others. And if that intention is to stimulate in a positive way, and I'm comfortable with it, that's fine. And you're right about misinterpretation. You can be misinterpreted, but I will try and bring that back to, okay, well, just to clarify, this was my intention with this information, and this is how I can back it up if there is ambiguity about how I've delivered it.
Yeah, I think that, and one of the things I love about your content is that it's, you're challenging, you're evidence backed, but you're also getting people to think about performance, to think about nutrition, which I think if you're someone like me who geeks out on that kind of thing, I'm like, it's a really good way to put content across. You know, I loved that post, the one you're referring to about, I think it was who's the fittest or what's the fittest sport, and then you had most athletic animal or something along those lines, and I'm like, oh, that's, they're interesting questions to think about when you think of performance and nutrition. And I really like that element of your content. Of course, the recipes and everything else are brilliant too, but that got me thinking. I'm like, oh, I wonder, I'm like, there's so many different ways to think about this. And I want to pull it back onto that performance element and that nutrition element. And you mentioned multiple times in this podcast, we talked about owning who you are, kind of the self-discovery, etc. But when it comes to people's nutrition, you talk a lot about owning your nutrition. Can you just explore what that means for people in a little bit more detail? Because I think it's such an important element for people to take away from today's podcast.
Yeah, I think that if you can own your nutrition, and I think that if you can really own your lifestyle on a really, really, really deep level and understand where your weaknesses are and where the barriers are to you achieving your nutrition goals, I think that's what will catapult you forward. And I think very often, I think most people, and I'm going to say most, and that's a sweeping statement, but I think most people are scratching the surface when it comes to living their lives from a general lifestyle and from a nutrition point of view. And owning your nutrition really, really, really means looking at how you live your life and where you need to invest time to avoid the pitfalls. And that people think about, I need to plan more. I need to batch cook. I need to do all this prep. Well, hold on a second. What are you batch prep cooking for? What are you prepping for? Because it's not just about going, well, Sunday is the day where I make all these meals. Well, is Monday and Tuesday a problem? Like, are Monday and Tuesday is the day where your schedules are the busiest and that your training demands are the highest? Or is it later in the week because you're tired and fatigued and you've had a tough week, and maybe Wednesday is the day where you need to really take a step back and go, hold on now, I know the last couple of weeks, because I've got a very early start on Thursday, I'm missing breakfast, or I don't have a snack between breakfast and lunch, or there's nowhere to eat on Thursday when I'm at work. And that's what owning your lifestyle and nutrition actually looks like. But if you don't have a process for that, you can't own it. So that's what I'm trying to develop with people. It's helping them to create their own process and their own system of reflection, previewing, reviewing, and planning in a very simple way. You know, a phased approach that builds in right where we began, that builds in the components of improved knowledge, improve skill, and that they have something that helps them to anchor them to their why, to maintain their motivation.
I love that. There's so much value there. It's in terms of your lifestyle needs to play into your nutrition and vice versa. Like, if you've got busy days where you're like, I'm going to do all my meal prep on a Monday or Tuesday, and they're your busiest days, they're probably not the best time to do meal prep. In the sense of lifestyle and nutrition, I just kind of have a follow-up on that. For people listening, what, and again, this may be a bit of a loaded question because there's multiple answers, I'm sure, but in terms of what jumps to mind, or even priority number one, what's the biggest takeaway when people need to own their nutrition? What advice do you offer them? Is it something along the lines of educating themselves around food, or working with people to kind of outsource it if they don't have the time themselves, or meal prep in general? What's kind of the pyramid of prioritization in terms of the bottom of the pyramid, or does something jump to mind when we explore kind of owning your nutrition in terms of an actual takeaway that people should focus on? What kind of comes to your head when I say that?
Oh, I think the best way that I'll answer that question is I'll give you how I will take people through the actual process. So I will ask people to go through a process of reflection on their actual knowledge and their skills. So rate it out of 10. Tell me where your pitfalls are, what you fall down on, what you find challenging, and write down, give me an example. And give me an example of a good day. Give me an example of a bad day. Give me an example of what you eat on a typical week, so that we can see the picture. And the last thing I really don't like it when people say as above, because then they're not actually really reflecting on their lifestyle. Like, they're just saying, well, this is typically what I eat. No, hold on a second. If you're telling me just typically what you're eating, then you're not properly engaged in this. So you go through that reflection, and then it's about talking through, okay, well, where are the issues within your schedule? You know, what are the things in the week that you can see, right? There's where the demands are within my training. There that where the demands are on my time and in my work. And it's going through that process. And, you know, I this might seem insane, but this happened. I had a client who, through COVID, realized that he now had time. He was in control of his lunch. He was in control of his breakfast, and he was in control of his dinner. But he really didn't have control of his lunch. And he dropped 6 kilos over the space of a very short space of time. I think it was like 6 kilos over 3 months, by really investing time in his lunch and having the availability of of prepping his lunch and enjoying his lunch during the middle of the day. He had never done this for a consistent period of time. And what he realized is that it was just too inconsistent. He some days he had his lunch, some places he had lunch at work, but it was really, really inconsistent. But when he nailed that down, he didn't find himself starving when he came in the evening. He wasn't snacking during the afternoon. It led to more consistency. So it's that kind of process. Again, I've gone through the different elements of it so many times, but that was it for him.
I love that. And it's just asking yourself that question and being honest. I think being honest with yourself, being honest with your coach, being honest with whoever you're working with, like that self-reflection is key, but also being honest that, look, this meal is off or I haven't been consistent. Because for the most part, a lot of people listening to this podcast, people that follow you, Daniel, that follow me, will have a good idea on nutrition. They've got a general idea on, you know, calorie intake or food choices that will be supportive or unsupportive, but it's the consistency element that people fall down on. So maybe it's just a case of asking yourself that question, you know, what's the my nutritional failure right now? Is it my lunch? Is it my breakfast? Is it my dinner? Is it not prepping my meals? And I think asking that question for everybody listening who's struggling with nutrition or struggling to hit any end goal, I think that can be a very, very positive thing to do. Daniel, I've loved this conversation. We will definitely be doing a round two at some stage if you are up for it, when we can go into all things mindset, nutrition, diet, etc. But I just have one final question. Because you're doing so many things right now, the success of the book, the programs, the people you're working with between Dublin, Leinster, etc. So it might be difficult to nail this single question down, but what are you most excited about right now?
Okay, that's quite topical because I very recently, like only last Friday, I met up with some of the young practitioners that are working with me, Emma Brennan and Neil Irwin. And so they've been helping me with the development of my content. And I have really, really been so excited by the thought and seeing their development and seeing their knowledge grow and their confidence grow and their ability to share information grow. And I'm really excited that with more help, I'm going to be able to spread my information more efficiently and more effectively and engage more people. And I've already touched on this. We are in the business of helping people and changing people's lives. And the concept, the idea that that might be a little bit more effective by having more support really, really excites me.
And I'm excited for that too. And as someone that consumes your content, that follows your Instagram, and now that we've connected properly, like I highly recommend checking out your social media platforms, the book, everything. Like you're, as I said, it's an evidence-backed approach. You have an amazing way of putting it across, a simple approach for nutrition, and the overall macro thesis of owning your nutrition, I think is such an amazing tool for people to take away. Daniel, can you tell everybody listening where is the best place for them to either pick up the book or follow you online, or even links to the website? And I will put them all in the show notes for today's episode.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Yeah. So www.davynutrition.com and all my contact information is there. And on my social media handles are at Davy Nutrition. But just a big thank you to you for facilitating a really good conversation. And also, you've done brilliantly. You're kind of leading a leading light in the industry. So thanks as well to you for all of the hard work and paving the way.
Oh, thanks so much, Daniel. Mate, we will do a round two again in the future in person, because we're doing this one over Skype. And for everybody listening, Sligo is my second home, my home away from home. So we'll definitely be doing another conversation in person, hopefully, for the next podcast. Mate, thank you so much again for your time. I know you've got a packed schedule today. Thank you for your message online, for sharing the value and doing everything you do. Mate, just keep inspiring and keep it up. And thank you from my side.
Thank you.
There you have it. What a gentleman. Like, we literally talked, just to give a little bit of context, we talked for about half an hour before the podcast and another half an hour or so after. It was just one of those conversations that was so easy to have. And I will definitely be bringing Daniel on again for round two at a future date. I love this conversation. I hope you did too. So as always, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, hit that subscribe button, hit that follow button for similar episodes talking to expert guests around nutrition, fitness, and mindset coming every single Monday. And as always, if you're enjoying the podcast and you've been a long-term subscriber and want to leave a review, that would be amazing. Just leave a rating or a review. That helps the podcast get out there. That's everything from this week. Catch you all next Monday.